So we discussed last time the very, very basics of Bishul Akum, and that there are two different reasons for it. But basically, food which is cooked by a non-Jew, either because of chasnus, because of a concern that is going to get close to them and intermarriage, or because we're concerned that they're going to put in non-kosher ingredients, is going to be forbidden. And it seems to be that we are concerned with both of those reasons. And the question is, what is included in this prohibition? Is every single food that you could possibly eat going to be included in this prohibition? If we thought about it just logically without looking at any of the sources, so we would probably assume that what? Well, maybe it depends on the reason, right? It might depend on the reason, right? If the reason for Bishul Akum is because of chasnus, is because of getting close, then maybe it depends on the type of food. Maybe there are some foods that are more significant and some foods that are less significant and less likely to lead to the closeness. If it has to do with mixing in of non-kosher food, then it's a little harder to understand what would be the difference. As long as other things can be included, then we should be concerned. I think that's what I would say if we were just looking at it from a completely svara, just from a logical perspective. But let's see what Chazal tells us on page 67, beginning with the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak. Rav Shmuel says in the name of Rav Yitzchak. I'm sorry, Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak says, Amar Rav, in the name of Rav, Kol ha-ne'echal kimos shehu chai, ein bo mishum bishulei nachrim. Okay, b'sura mas nuach. That's how they taught it in Surah. So what is the halacha? That anything which can be eaten raw, anything which can be eaten raw, and now a non-Jew cooks it, it is not subject to Bishul Akum. We'll take a simple case. You have an apple. An apple can obviously, is very, very normal to eat an apple raw. It's probably more normal and more common to eat an apple raw than it is cooked. A non-Jew comes along and cooks the apple. It is not prohibited because of Bishul Akum. Why? Doesn't tell us. That is the first statement of the Gemara. That's how they taught it in Surah. B'Pumpadisa, in the yeshiva in Pumpadisa, Mas Nuhache, they taught a little differently. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Amar Rav, they taught from Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak the name of Rav. Kol she'eno ne'echol al shulchan melachim lelafes bo'as apas, ein bo mishum bishulei nachrim. Anything that is not eaten on the table of kings together with bread is not subject to Bishul Akum. Not subject to Bishul Akum. Oh. So basically, two rules emerge. And again, it's not clear whether they're arguing or whether they are additional rules. But the two potential kulas or dispensations where Bishul Akum does not apply are these two. One is if the item can be eaten chai, if the item can be eaten raw and now it was cooked. And the second one is if it's not a food which is be fit to be on the royal table, but to be fit on the royal table, then it would not be subject to Bishul Akum. Now, obviously, the second one is going to be much more difficult to define than the first one, right? Nechal gmoshu chai. Okay, we'll tumult and we'll get through some interesting cases soon. But there are certainly many, many cases that are objectively excluded. When it comes to the second category, we could definitely think of things that are objectively included, but it's a little bit harder to draw the line about what would not be considered to be ola al shulchan melachim. So, okay, but what equals a peasant's food?
That a king would not eat. The president
ate
burgers.
Practically, what meaning? He said the president eats hamburgers, right? So we have to figure out who is the royalty here.
In the days of Gemara, they didn't have delicacies that peasant would be able to afford.
Oh, that's also good. Okay, that's a very good point also, which is that when are we going to define this? Are we going to define this based on what was, or are we going to define this based on what is? Meaning, do we care about what used to be Ola al Shulchan Melachim, or do we care in the particular time and locale what is Ne'echal al Shulchan Melachim?
Is the main dish, and then there's the side dish, is the appetizer, you could have a cucumber on the table of the king. There wasn't
this naked. Okay, you could have a cucumber on the table of the king, but... I'm saying, though, there are plenty of foods that doesn't matter when it's eaten and it could go on the king's table, but there are certain things that would be pasnished for the to go onto the king's table.
Spaghetti. Like...
maybe a bowl of spaghetti. We're gonna.
I don't know. Gemara tells us about that fancy. Was it in Teruvas? The fancy squirrel or something they used to eat.
Okay, there are certain foods that were certainly only on Shulchan Malachim, but that doesn't mean that those are the only things that were Nechal on Shulchan Malachim. Right, a steak is clearly something which is Nechal al Shulchan Malachim. You could debate. Can steak in some form fit into the first category, right? As our palates have become more sophisticated, and we will eat meat raw, not as common as what we'll really talk about soon, which is fish. Fish is going to be a huge discussion, which we're going to talk about soon, right? Because fish, for those that eat sushi, with not the vegetable one, like real sushi, does that impact the halakha for everybody? And that would be a huge nafka mina. Because if, and this question comes up all the time, if we would argue that because you can have salmon or tuna, which is eaten raw in the form of sushi, and therefore it's nechal shulchai, that now it's, again, if we paskin like both of these halacha, which we'll see shortly we do, then you could, if you are on, this is a case which comes up frequently, you're on a cruise, and they have fish, and you can identify the fish, and they will double wrap the fish and put it in the oven, and you don't have any concerns in terms of, we'll call it kashrus. Is there a concern of bishul akum or not? It's a very, very, very big nafkamina. We're going to talk about it in detail shortly. These are the two cases that the Gemara brings up.
It also doesn't just say al shulchan melech, it also says eating with pas.
Right. So that line, yeah. So the significance of that line is not 100% clear. It seems to be that just means that they eat everything with bread. Anything that was significant went along with bread. And for the most part, that line is dropped from the post-kim as we go forward. Because again, just the times changed and we don't eat everything with bread. So the klal, as we'll see it soon, is more broadly, I guess, defined as ochel, as nechal shulchan melachim. But let's see this. So how do we pasken? Again, the pashtus is that this is two different versions of the same statement, and that one of them was the one that was said and the other one was not the one that was said, right? Again, we could argue maybe he just said both at two different times, and that actually seems to be maybe how Tosfos is understanding it. How so? Look at the Tosfos in number 13 on the bottom of the page. Pasuk Rabbeinu Tam deHilchasa Kahani Trei Lishni. That we paskin like both Lishonos. We paskin like both versions. The Iika Chad Minayu, and if one factor is present, Oh Nechol Chai, either that it's an item which can be eaten raw. Or eino ola, or it does not go up onto the Shulchan of Malachim. Ein bo mishum bishuli avdei kachavim. Why? De bishal sofrim halach achar hamikil. He says because his entire din is a din derabanan, and therefore we have the right to be mekel, and we will accept both positions. Is that inherently a contradiction? It's not, because again, both of them could have been said, right? It could have been he was giving shir, and one time he pointed out the halacha the same, one time the other way, and they're not necessarily a stira to a contradiction to one another, since it's not a stira, and since the whole halacha is only drabanan, says Tosfos, we have the right to rely on either of these. Let's see how this is developed. So it says the Shulchan Aruch, Yordea Kuf Yud Gimel, Davar Shenechal Kvo Shulchai. The gam all the shulchan melachim lachmas bo sapas all the parperes shebishlu goy afilu bekli yisrael beisrael aser mishum bishule goyim. Right, something which is not eaten raw and is all the shulchan melachim. Right, it's the same thing, but it's written in the opposite order just to confuse us. Right, but you it's not raw and it is all the shulchan melachim. Then any goy cooks it. Even, and this is what he's stressing, I feel a bit clear, Yisrael, but base Yisrael. We're not worried about the utensils. This isn't a question of tarovas. The utensils were kosher. It was in the house of a Jew. As far as a Jew was watching over it, was supervising it. You have a mashgiach present. You have a mashgiach present, but the cooking was entirely done by a non-Jew. Aser mishum bishulei goyim. Okay. So now that we know that both of these factors are accepted, the halacha, so we...
You say both are accepted, but didn't the Shulchan Aruch say both are required?
Yeah, in order for it to be a problem, you have to have both. So I mean, either one of them would be a kula, right? It's the same thing in the opposite order. As long as you have one of these two factors, there's no problem b'shalakum. You need both of them to not be present. So you need something which is not eaten raw and is olah shulchan malachim in order for it to be problematic.
And both of these factors can change over time.
We don't know. That's what we're going to do. Now we're going to look at each of them individually and understand them. Again, the Shulchan Aruch didn't tell us that. We could have said that it's defined. Again, there are times when we say things are defined by the time of the Takana, and there are other times that we say things develop over time.
But even if you said that, we wouldn't know back then. Like, we don't know whether...
Well, then the poskim would probably have spoken about it.
Uh-huh.
But we'll see. So, preview of coming attractions. We'll see. It does depend on time. So we have to see exactly how the poskim get there. So the first issue, and again he summarizes this well in the orangey yellowish part at the beginning of the section, right? Should edible raw be defined based on whether the majority of people in that locale would eat the food raw, or whether at least a minority of people would eat it raw? That's the chakira. If there are people that eat it raw, is that enough to call it that it's nechal shulchai, or does it have to be that is the normative way of eating it? And then the sub to that is, well, it does depend on the location. Could it be that in one place, it is normative to eat it raw, and somewhere else where it's not, it's going to be subject to bishulakim? Now, does that make any sense to have a distinction where you could have the same food that's usser in one place and mutter somewhere else? The answer is it does. Because especially if the idea has to do with chasnus, it has to do with the significance of the cooking. So then, yeah, in different places, it could be that there is a different amount of significance. So let's see that. So where do we see it? So the Gemara has the following case. And again, it's Lamed Chesem Beis. It's the exact same sugya, right? The Gemara that we had before was Lamed Chesem Adav. It's the same sugya in Avodah Zarah. What's the topic? A beitza, an egg. Egg is also very, very halachal and maisa, right? You go to one of these breakfast things in a hotel, and you bring your own frying pan. You bring your own frying pan. Can the chef make you an egg or not? So again, it's not a kashrus concern. Again, if you make sure that everything's clean or whatever else, you might be able to avoid the kashrus concern, but you might have a bishul akum concern. So says the Gemara, beitza tsluya, if you have a roasted egg, we'll call it a fried egg, bar kapara shari, v'Rab Yochanan asar. Bar kapara says it would be mutter, Rab Yochanan says that it's going to be asar. So what is Rab Yochanan basically telling us? That why is it aser? Because of bishulakum. Why is that because of bishulakum? Because an egg is not something that is eaten raw. So says the Beis Yosef. Wait 1 second. V'afagav de beitza reuya legom chaya. But there are people that drink raw eggs, right? A gogol mogol, right? The chazanim. The real chazanim drink down the raw egg. I don't know why. I'm sure it probably does more to harm them than good. But that was the minhag of the chazanim. And there are probably other people also that have raw eggs. So even though it's possible to lo mikre nechal k'moshu chay de'ein zo achila chashuva. This is not a significant manner of eating. Significant matter of eating. The question is, well, why is it not a significant manner of eating? Does it depend because that is we'll call it a low-class way of eating it? Or is it because very few people eat it in that way? So says the Aruch HaShulchan like this. He helps define this category for us in number 17. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, Davar Pashatu, it is clear, when it comes to defining whether something is edible raw or not, hochin achar rov bnei adam. We go basar rov. We look at the majority. Majority rules. If most people would not eat this item raw, there are individuals, again, maybe not even just one, but it's a minority of people who would eat this raw. Even for that guy, meaning it's not just for somebody else, he can't rely on the weirdo who has the raw egg, but even the weirdo himself, he is not allowed to have it cooked, even though he prefers the egg raw. It's but l'daito eitzel kol adam. His opinion is nullified vis-a-vis everybody else. And the opposite is true also. If most people eat it raw, but I'm finicky and I won't eat it raw, but most people would eat it raw, become mokum mutterbo. Right? We don't only say it l'chumra, we'll say it l'kula also. We go completely after the rov, and we need to figure out, is this an item which is defined as something which is eaten raw or not? We look at the rov. And the yachid can come along. Let's just finish the paragraph and then we'll take any questions. V'chein pasak echad megedolei achronim. And so pasak is one of the achronim, the prichadosh. Aval in medina achas ocho kishichaya. What if you have an entire area, country, where they eat it raw? U'medina acheres ein ochlin osa rak mevushol. And in another country, they would eat it cooked. Ein niftalin ze lo ze. Then it can be defined based on the particular country. So again, we'll get into it more in a second, but in theory, let's take a place, assuming that in Japan, where the sushi is much more originated, I think, and much more common, maybe there we would say that's completely normal. Maybe most of it's eaten that way. That could potentially, we're not getting the halacha yet, could potentially be a different halacha than in the United States, where people like to have sushi in their pizza stores, because I don't know why, because Jews and the sushi have this thing right now. But most of them don't actually eat raw fish that way. Again, we're going to define it more. But the chiddush of the Aruch HaShulchan is that, again, if we're looking at everywhere together, and then the yachid is drawn after the rabbim, being the kula, being the chumra. If we have totally different cultures and totally different places, and they do their own thing, not just a family, it has to be a significant amount. Again, he says a country. Then we would define it based on the particular country. And again, logically, we can make sense out of it, because it has to do with what's going to cause kirva, what's going to be considered to be a chashuva type of cooking that shows that I want to be buddy-buddy with you. Again, a lot of this is certainly assuming much more like that tzad than the tzad of... Then we're concerned about non-kosher things being mixed in. It does seem to me, when we get into the nitty-gritty, that is the overwhelming. Again, it's part of the halacha, but the overwhelming svara that dominates the halacha really seems to be that it's because of chasnas. Yeah?
Didn't we just finish learning that you need both ifnino ne'achal kamo shu'chai and ifnino olah shalcha malachim, right? We learned that. We
just In order for it to be... Yeah, correct.
Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan the Gemara says he's asar, and then we start saying it's because it can't be eaten raw. But I thought if it's just one of them, it's okay. What about the fact that an egg might be okay to be olah shalcha malachim?
No, we're assuming it is.
So then it wouldn't matter if it's eino ruah. I thought you just need one.
Yeah, so he's assuming, Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara is assuming that an egg is olah shalcha malachim. And therefore, the only way to be makil would be if it's eaten raw. Right? Okay. Good. Fine.
If the Rabbanim were really afraid of this, then why don't they just answer? Why are they making it particular? Just answer everything. Don't eat with a guy.
They're trying to make things realistic also. They understand. Again, you see this all the time, that the Rabbanim did not make things that ain't rovat zibur cholin la'amod bo. Imagine this time of year, if you told every Jew that you can't eat together with a guy. As it is, the number of situations and complicated things that people are stuck in now, so it's hard enough. And puts people through big nisyonos in terms of work. Chazal understood that that's not realistic. So therefore, we have a specific concern. Let's address it in a way that takes the concerns into, but is not more machmir than necessary. You're a big machmir. Chazal weren't such machmir, and Chazal wanted to make our lives easy. Okay. Ah. So that is... fine. Now we're going to, in the next two pieces, the Hebrew piece and then the English piece, we're going to get a little bit into this sushi situation. The sushi situation. So he quotes here from the Sefer HaKashrus. Davar nechal b'odo chai. If something is eaten, I'm sorry, is edible raw, afil nizbashel ayidei nachri ad shenimcha. If it gets cooked, even until it gets dissolved, shenishtansa tzurasu legamre. Even if it's cooked, then it's unrecognizable. It's unrecognizable. V'nase ketav shel mamish mikom mokom uter b'achila. Okay, so again, I don't know that we would have necessarily assumed not this way, but he says it explicitly. Once we say that an item that is raw is not subject to Bishul Akum, it does not matter what happens to it, even if it is turned. Meaning you might have said, okay, an apple, so it's an apple. Did you bake the apple? It kind of still looks like an apple, so okay, so that's permitted. But if you turn it into, you know, you can make an apple into a dough for, I don't know, they can make anything into anything these days. Then maybe it's so different that becomes a problem again. No, once it's mutter, it's mutter. Okay. Oh. So he writes like this. Look in the orangey part in the bottom. One interesting application of this question addressed by Poskim today is whether fish is currently considered a food that is edible raw. Although normal fish is certainly cooked, sushi has become quite popular in many countries across the world, in addition to Japan, its country of origin. Does the fact that fish is eaten raw by many people in the form of sushi change the status of fish today? That's the Shaila. So some poskim, such as Rav Menachem Ganak, the CEO of OU Kosher, argue that fish today indeed is not subject to the restrictions of Bishul Akum. I believe, I could be mistaken, I believe that is not the official position of the OU. I believe that is quoting his opinion. I believe that when I saw the piece written up for the OU, Rav Schechter said not that way. That Rav Schechter said that he does not think that the amount of sushi that is eaten, and again, it's also an interesting question. I think somewhere he might discuss about it. Yeah, I think in the footnote on the bottom here, he says, even in terms of the sushi, it could be you only look, I think this is what Rav Schechter assumes, you only look at the people that would eat, okay, now we're really going to test my knowledge here, I think it's called sashimi, meaning the actual slices of the raw fish. But if it's only the spicy, you're not really eating it, it's mixed in, there happens to be some tuna there, or salmon in there. No, you don't really taste the people that are finicky and won't have fish, won't touch it. But again, no,
Sefer HaKashrus just said the opposite. Sefer HaKashrus says if it doesn't still look like fish, but it's still in there, then it should be okay.
No, you're saying the opposite of Sefer HaKashrus. The Sefer HaKashrus is saying if you have something that we already know is eaten raw, then the fact that you now made it into a fancy dish doesn't change its status. We're trying to establish its status as something that's eaten raw. So in order to say this is eaten raw, you can't say, it's eaten raw when mixed with other things. That's not the same thing as eating it raw. Right, if you only eat the apple when it's ground up and, you know, in charoses, but you won't eat the apple actually raw, then maybe that's not a defining factor of it being eaten raw. Yesh ladon. But you could certainly be machalik, you can certainly say, listen, if you can only eat the fish because it's mixed up with all other things, but if you actually had to, you know, bite into a slice of that fish, that it wouldn't happen. So I think, and I think this is where Rav Schechter is coming from, I think even if you take the people that will eat... Jews go into several categories. You have people that won't touch sushi at all. Most Jews will touch sushi, but a good part number of Jews will only touch the vegetable sushi. Then you have the Jews that will touch only the cooked fish in the sushi. Then you have the ones that will only do the spicy mixed in. Then you have the Yechidei Sgula who will actually be able to take a bite out of raw fish. That number does not seem to be so high, even relative to the number of people eating sushi. So I think I think that if you take, I think that's where Rav Schechter is coming from. I think Rabbi Ganak is maybe just looking at, again, as long as it's somewhat normative throughout the world, that's good enough. Again, I didn't see the piece because it's quoted in the Masorah Journal. I didn't have a chance to look it up inside, but I'm pretty sure when I saw, maybe I can find it right now. I remember who sent it to me.
I think you're underestimating what the power of sushi is at a chasna or bar mitzvah.
It's not true. If you go to the chasna, whatever, what's always left? The slices of the fish. All the other sushi is gone.
My experience.
Really? Whenever I go there, that's what's left. The
you can take a poll around here. I bet you everyone here eats sushi. Other than you, Rabbi. I know you don't eat sushi.
No, I have to say I'll eat it. I'll eat almost anything in general. Oh, here we go. I found it. Even my new glasses aren't going to help for this. Here we go. From Rabbi Eli Gersten. Rabbi Eli Gersten lives in Passaic. He is the recorder of psak for the OU. So he doesn't make the psak, but he's the one who sits in on the meetings with, at the time, Rav Schechter and Rav Belsky Zatzal, and recorded what their psak were. So he writes like this. Rabbi Gersten? Maybe he did. I don't know. I haven't been in touch with him in a while. We email every so often when I want to find out what the... you post can say about a certain topic. But they're not working. My new glasses are supposed to work for this, but they're not. Okay. The Gemara and Shulchan Aruch say that large fish, including tuna, require bishul yisrael because they're not eating raw and serve not shulchan malachim. Today, does common deserve raw tuna in the form of sushi? Does this change the halacha? Would it be correct to assume that tuna no longer requires bishul yisrael because sushi is so commonly eaten? Okay. Tuna, salmon. Rav Schechter and Rav Belsky answer that we should not consider tuna food that is edible raw, thereby permit tuna cooked by a non-Jew, just because people commonly eat sushi. We find the Magen Avraham says that ginger is considered edible raw, since it is eaten raw when mixed with sugar. In this example, the clear intention is to eat ginger, and the sugar is simply added as an enhancement. However, in the case of sushi, one cannot say that the intention is to eat fish, and the other ingredients are merely added to enhance the fish, but rather people eat sushi are interested in all of the components, such as the rice, avocado, and vegetables, which are also the majority. Some varieties of sushi do not even contain fish. Although fish is an important ingredient in sushi, it is not of the same importance as the ginger when mixed with sugar. Nechel chai is only... The picture's not so clear. Said, I guess, when the intention is to eat the food item raw and not when it is only eaten raw as a component of another food. Although some people eat sashimi, which is plain raw fish, most people still do not. Okay, this is Rav Schechter wrote this. He wrote Tufshin Ayin Dalet. So it's possible in the last 9 years. Okay, yeah, 9 years. That things have changed.
But he quoted Ganak and Rav Melamed and did not quote Rav Schechter. Why is that? That doesn't make sense.
I would imagine that he just didn't have the piece that I had. I don't know that he did his again, things that were in writing. He quoted Rabbi Ganak in the Masorah Journal. Generally speaking, this I do know from other situations, Rabbi Ganak will have a different opinion, but we'll be mevatel his das in terms of OU Psak to Rav Schechter and Rabbi Belsky. I think now maybe Rav Schechter and Rav Asher Weiss. I'm not sure who they replaced Rabbi Belsky with. So I believe the official OU position, and again, they're not kaminas, because when you have these people coming, and sometimes the sushi people will cook the sushi. I mean, they'll drop it into the fryer or something like that. So, again, if you are concerned about the Bishul Akum, then you need to have a Jew turn on. Again, we'll talk about the getting on soon, but a Jew participating in the cooking. Now, either way, this only helps with the fish. In terms of the actual sushi, the biggest challenge in sushi places in terms of kashrus is the rice. Because the rice is certainly not nechal shulchai. I don't know anybody that's eating raw rice. And the rice cooker isn't on all the time. When it comes to other things, as we'll see later, you can put a pilot light on or things like that. The rice cooker has to get turned on each time. So you really need to have a mashkiach present in order to, I think, it used to be at least, in the RCBC places, there's a big sign over the rice cooker reminding whoever is there that you need to get the rabbi before the rice cooker goes. I used to train them because signs you ignore after the first few times you see them, but it's good to have a reminder in place anyway. But the bigger challenge when it comes to Bishul Akum is not the fish when it comes to the sushi. It's really the rice. Okay, so that was so again. It seems to me that most assume that it does not help. Rav Melamed actually says an interesting shita. It's actually similar to this, I think. If you look on in 19, he writes, even though it has become more common to eat raw fish like in the form of sushi, carpaccio, right? You have it also when it comes to meat, that people are eating some meat raw. It still has a problem It's a different svara. He says it's almost like a different food when you're eating it in that way. And maybe this is what he means also. I'm not 100% sure. But maybe part of what he means is that it's not even the same grade fish. Right? You can't just take any... You're not going to just go to any place and start taking your salmon and then eating it raw. Right? And when it comes to tuna, you need they call it sushi-grade tuna. So I don't know what the nafkamina is, but I asked somebody once, and he told me all it has to do is with freshness. I don't know if that's true or not, which makes...
Also, it probably has to do with whether or not you're going to get sick here.
Right, but that probably has to do with freshness. That might have to do with freshness.
The way it's watched, the way it's prepared.
Yeah. So, Bekitzer, so his... So his svara, again, and the nafkamina is that his svara would say that even if people, according to Ramalamed, is a chumra, meaning according to Reb Shechter, it would seem like if the sashimi eating, you know, went up significantly in terms of percentage, then you could be mekel on the Bishul Akum, right? Because then that becomes normative. According to him, he thinks that the whole sushi situation is just like a different sug. You can't compare that kind of fish to regular kind of fish. So according to him, you certainly will not end up with a situation in which you can be mekel on fish. And lemais, I think that's a psak. B'dieved, is there what to rely on? I don't know. Maybe b'shas hatchak. Since there are poskim that are mekel, if somebody was really stuck, maybe there is what to rely on. I'm not sure. But lechatchila, certainly not. When people have reached out in advance of their cruises and they're asking about this, I don't think it's a viable solution.
Look at this last line.
Yeah. When it comes to the sushi itself, even though the rice is already cooked, there is no problem with shlakim, since the primary food is the fish, which is not cooked. That's l'shitaso. Meaning, since he holds that you look at it, I guess that's the kula in his chumrah, right? If you look at the type of sushi fish as its own category, so then if you wanted to fry that, then that you could maybe be mekel on. That you can maybe be make on.
Let's say you were in a hotel and you had your frying pan and you went into the kitchen and you turned on the flame. And then let's say you left. Would you trust them?
So we haven't. I will not.
Forward is kosher.
On multiple levels, I'm not going to answer that question. For the main reason at this point is because we didn't learn anything about turning on the fire. So until we get there, we understand why that should help. I don't even want to discuss it. So if you want to ask me, if you're standing there and watching, would that help if you did not turn on the fire? The answer is no. Even if you're watching. When we get to the kula of...
You kept mentioning the cruises with the fish. And it sounds yeah. Like if you could have gotten over the fish lockup, you would have done it.
If double wrapped. Double wrapped. If you double wrapped it, and
you double wrapped it.
Yeah, if you handed them a piece, if you handed them fish, double wrapped with your own spices or lemon on it, and it comes out double wrapped. So it's no, again, it would be no different than giving them your double wrapped, already cooked food.
That's tape.
So this also do the same thing. Do the same thing. Tape it.
No,
again, if it was good. No. He say if it was good, why would I be? I would be okay with it if all the other conditions of the other food were met. Okay, let's see if we can get through the other. Yeah.
So there are other ways of, because Gavar had other ways of doing of eating fish. They had sardines or fish that would be salted.
Yeah.
Salted. So what's?
So maybe we'll get there towards the end. We definitely won't get there today. What comes up actually with fish a lot is smoking. What's the status of smoking? Right, lox. Lox is smoked. I think whitefish is often smoked as well. Bekitzer, I think we don't consider smoking to be cooking. So that's a potential kula. But again, that's a kula in terms of if you have all the kashrus concerns are met. In terms of Bishul Akum, right, if you had a factory or something like that that was producing lox.
Or sardines even. Sardines were heavily salted.
That's all you do is salt them?
Yeah, that's what they eat in brine.
As much as I said, I don't really mind what I eat. Sardines might be the cap. Might be the cap. It's a different level. I have had them, but it's a different level. I'm not sure. It takes a lot of gvura to get the sardines.
That smoking, that we might not hold smoking like cooking, if by zeya we hold that as with in your oven, if you have zeya, that's considered part of cooking.
We'll get there when we get there, but it's not the same thing. Steam and smoke are not the same thing.
No,
it's not the same thing. But we'll hopefully hopefully we will get there. Good. Okay, well, we'll start the Olah Shulchan Malachim. I don't think we're going to finish it because I really don't want to rush it because I think it's important, but we'll whet our appetites a little bit for next time. Let's discuss next time. So next time is Hanukkah. Yeah? Next week is Hanukkah? I'm available. Do you build more of that? Okay, so we'll learn about Hashem. I'm not available the week after that, after Hanukkah. So I don't want to miss. I don't want to miss 2 weeks.
Oh, you go to Florida, right?
We're going to Israel.
Okay, Mitzvah
Hashem. You're going to Israel the day after Hanukkah. So, Florida's after that. Yeah, busy. I got a busy few weeks coming up. Got some lunch in Florida. Pizza in Israel. Baruch Hashem. Okay. So let's start a little bit. That will get us thinking. Ready for the Olah Shulchan Malachim. Category, and you know, maybe the way we'll frame it is we'll frame it as this: when we say that as the Olah Shulchan Malachim, when it says as the Olah Shulchan Malachim, what do we mean? Does it mean something that the Melech would not eat, or does it mean, which again would have to then mean that if, let's say, we'll call it the president, the king, whoever it is, will eat pancakes for breakfast, but he would only eat pancakes for breakfast in his personal breakfast room. If he had to serve a spitz, I don't know if they have state breakfasts, but as of that, he definitely wouldn't put out pancakes. So meaning, do we look at what's served at things where he's representing, let's say at the state dinner? Or do we look at what a president, or again, would not eat? Nafka mina, maybe something, like you said before, like the president eats hamburgers. But they are, again, other than Trump, they're not serving hamburgers at a dinner in the, at a dinner in the White House.
Right.
At a dinner in the White House. Right. The football team, right? One of the football teams, I think. Okay, so that bichlal probably doesn't count. But that's going to be the question, right? And that's going to be a very, very important one, because it's going to be very, very different. As we'll see as we go forward, some of the Hechsherim went so far as when there were certain things that were up in the air that they were trying to figure out, they asked the White House chef, would you serve this at a state dinner? So one of the situations that will come up is canned vegetables. Assuming that it's a vegetable that is not eaten, raw, right? Not every vegetable can be eaten raw. Potatoes are a very, very big discussion. But I think, are beets eaten raw? Maybe. Yeah. Beets are eaten raw? Not. I don't know. There are other vegetables. Okay, either way. If we have a situation in which you... So then, if they would cook them as they would process them for canned, that would never be Olah Shulchan Malachim. So how does that factor in? You could make beets into something that's Olah Shulchan Malachim, but not those beets, right? The beets that are cooked in such a way, he points this out later on, if it wasn't here, it was somewhere else that I was looking in terms of Bishul Akam stuff, the White House chef said they would never use a canned vegetable, which is not so surprising. I actually would have been surprised had he said otherwise. In preparing a state dinner, everything is fresh. So is that a different form of cooking, or do we look? No, but this vegetable would appear. The same thing would be true with potatoes. I'm sure potatoes in some form would be served in the White House. But there's a discussion in the post-game. What about French fries? Are French fries something which is Olah Shulchan Malachim? It's not something which is you would normally assume is going to be served at a state dinner. But potatoes in some other form, maybe. So the Jews, this Aruch HaShulchan at the beginning, actually one of the major questions is, and a lot of this topic revolves around potatoes. That I guess potatoes, when they were first introduced, were much more exotic than what they have turned into. You know, we have discovered that you can make anything out of potatoes. V'haraya, Pesach, you can have pizza made out of potatoes. I don't fully understand exactly how that's possible, but we'll. So that's what we're going to say. I'd rather not start it, but that's what we're going to see as we're going forward. That's what we have to keep in mind: is what is the definition of Olah Shulchan Malachim, and maybe that will help us come up with certain kulas in terms of this. Does it depend on how it's cooked? Does it depend on the type of food? And maybe that will give us some flexibility. See, if you look at the very, very bottom of page 71, he quotes an article, "Are potato chips subject to the prohibition of Bishalakim?" So potato chips are also an interesting question. I think they asked Rabbi Yashiv about it, and he said something about chips. But I think everybody assumed he was talking about potato chips. But in Eretz Yisrael, chips are French fries. So there's a whole tumult which one he was talking about. I think most people assume that he was talking about French fries and not talking about a community garden. So we'll see him here at Eretz Hashem a little more next week. And certainly, fried potatoes are a great topic for Hanukkah.